Tonight on the Daily Debrief, a top administrator arrested in the Larry Nassar sex abuse scandal. A Florida woman speaks to a judge on charges she conspired with her husband's friend to have her husband murdered. And, oh, she then married the friend. And new details about Michael Avenatti's legal troubles, why a judge granted a restraining order. Plus, a sex offender in jail, but his mother's winning lotto ticket changes everything. That's straight ahead on the Daily Debrief for Tuesday, November 20th. And good evening, everybody. Breaking news right off the top of the debrief tonight. The former president of Michigan State University has been arrested for allegedly lying to police about the Larry Nassar gymnastics sexual abuse scandal. Luanna Simon is charged with two felony counts and two misdemeanor counts. Court documents say she lied when she told Michigan State Police that she was not aware of the nature of the complaint that led to a 2014 investigation involving Nassar. Simon is the third person charged after the Attorney General's office in that state took over the investigation into Nassar. Simon faces up to 4 years in prison if she's convicted on these charges. Bottom line here, an arraignment is scheduled on Monday. Law and Crime senior editor Ron Blitzer is here with me tonight to break this down. Ron, this president resigned in the Larry Nassar fallout, and now she's charged.
Yeah, Luanna Simon stepped down as president of Michigan State University at about the same exact time that Larry Nassar was sentenced to up to 175 years in prison for molesting dozens of women and girls over the course of decades while he was a doctor for Michigan State University and USA Gymnastics. And now, as part of an investigation going into what Michigan State University did or didn't know about the allegations against Nassar over the years, Luanna Simon is the latest official to now face charges.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be really interesting. We covered the Larry Nassar hearings here on the Law and Crime Network. We watched those dozens of people get up there and make victim impact statements. The judge let them all in. And I remember sitting around this very desk and saying, look, if this problem is this serious, investigators have to be looking right at the top of these organizations, because usually problems get nipped when there are one or two incidents. But to have that many victims come forward, there had to have been something more serious going on.
Yes, like you said, if there's one or two incidents, maybe things are different. If there were a small number of incidents, then you could say, well, maybe people didn't come forward right away or people didn't know. But when you have that many and there were people who complained, in order for this to go not taken care of for so many years, there had to have been something going on where people were intentionally turning a blind eye.
And that's where the investigation led. Ron Blitzer, senior editor here at Law and Crime, appreciate the insight. New details surrounding legal trouble for star attorney Michael Avenatti tonight. A judge granted Avenatti's girlfriend, the actress Morelli Minniuti, a restraining order. Court documents indicate Minniuti and Avenatti were arguing over money when he called her ungrateful and a couple of other swear words. He's then accused of hitting her with a pillow, grabbing her wrist, pulling her off of bed, and ordering her out of his apartment. Avenatti says security video will vindicate him and threaten to sue news organizations for misreporting the facts of the incident. Time now for a check of other criminal incidents making headlines. Here is Anthony Velez.
Here are today's top crime stories trending on LawAndCrime.com and across the country.
Sorry about that, folks. We have a court appearance today we want to discuss right now involving a woman facing trial over the suspicious disappearance of her husband some 18 years ago. Denise Williams of Florida faces charges for allegedly planning to murder her husband, Mike Williams. Mike had a friend named Brian Winchester, and authorities think Winchester was the killer. Winchester ended up marrying Denise Williams after the husband was out of the way. Mike Williams disappeared back in 2002 after a duck hunting trip. People originally thought he was drowned and was eaten by alligators, of all things. His mother never believed that. Denise Williams asked that he be declared dead after just 6 months of being disappeared. The normal window in Florida is 5 years for such a declaration. Now, Denise Williams had no problem collecting her husband's $2 million insurance policy. Behind the scenes, the prosecution is accusing the defense of dirty tricks. More on that in just a minute. But first, Denise Williams herself spoke to the judge today saying she doesn't need to be present for deposition testimony. Prosecutors downplayed the importance of the deposition.
The testimony is essentially most of, as far as the state's concerned, most of Mr. Dungy's testimony has to do with background aspect, the search, things along those lines, maybe a little background information of how he knows all the parties, and things along those lines. There's nothing where he is essentially pointing the finger at either one of the parties, either Mr. Winchester nor Mrs. Williams.
Please state your name, please, ma'am.
Denise Williams.
You've heard what Mr. Padovano said, that you wish to waive your presence at this testimony that's
yes.
going to be taken. Is that correct?
Yes.
You understand that this will be presented to a jury and considered just like trial testimony. You understand that?
Yes.
You know, maybe that it doesn't have anything that you would want to participate in, but you understand because of the way it's going to be working, you're not going to be able to suggest to your attorneys questions that they might want to ask that, you know, they might not think of. You understand that?
Yes.
You sure you wish to do that?
Yes.
And you're making that request?
Yes.
All right. You see any problem with that, Mr. Padovano?
No, sir, I don't.
And y'all join in her request?
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll waive Ms. Williams' presence at the testimony to be taken.
Okay, folks, Michael Bryant is with us tonight on the Daily Debrief. Michael, good to see you again.
Nice to see you, Aaron.
Okay, so the authorities think the wife and the friend conspired to get the husband out of the way, and then the wife and the friend get married.
Yes, and as
it's a love triangle in a classic sense.
It is Shakespearean crazy. I also believe, that I have to double-check this, that the boyfriend was somewhat in control of releasing the insurance proceeds. He was somehow involved with the company that paid off this policy prematurely. As you said, you know, it's 6 months after the guy's presumed dead. These folks had it all worked out.
The normal window is years and years and years. Now, here's where this really turned into another soap opera behind the scenes between the prosecution and the defense. The defense was apparently conducting a telephone survey of voters to see just how much they knew about the case. And in the process of doing the survey, allegedly, according to the state, the defense was giving away details about the case. In other words, the defense is saying, oh, the media has poisoned the
right.
jury pool in this area. And then the defense is accused of poisoning
right.
the jury pool
in the area.
If they haven't,
we will. Yes, I get it. And that's, you know, obviously that's inappropriate. But it may be effective, ultimately, you know, if it, in fact, does poison the pool and they've got to move the case, then defense wins.
Yeah, this is going to get really, really interesting. But this is just a pretrial stage. The judge has a lot to sort out before this ultimately goes to trial with motions in limine. Of course, those are the evidence motions that determine what goes in and what doesn't go in front of the jury. But the litigants basically said, hey, we're mostly set. We want this to get on the calendar. We
right.
want a trial.
Right. And I think that's the best way to approach this because it puts the other side a little bit on the defensive. Because they may not want it to move so quickly. So I think it's a good move. It's the best defense, good offense.
It's going to be an interesting case to watch. You know, you've got the love triangle element. You've got the defendant in court today saying, okay, you know, I'm fine with this deposition. You know, and the prosecution's turning around saying, this deposition really isn't going to point the finger directly at her. It's a lot of background information. She doesn't need to be there for it, but certainly her attorneys are going to be asking the questions
of course.
On her behalf.
I have to believe she's got something twisting around in her mind there as to how she will benefit by not being there. You would think she would want to be there, and anybody a party to an action like this has a right to be there. So what's she thinking? Why is she trying to get out of going?
Good point. I mean, usually people would prefer to be in a
of
deposition
course.
Rather than be sitting in jail waiting for trial.
Of course.
Okay, she showed up in a jumpsuit today.
Yeah, she had nothing else to wear, perhaps. I don't know.
Maybe not, maybe not. Michael Bryant will check in with you again in a second. Still ahead tonight here on the Daily Debrief, though, sentencing this week for the Colorado man accused of murdering his entire family. We will break down the Chris Watts case as he is carted off to spend the rest of his life behind bars. That's after the break here on the Debrief. Welcome back, everybody. Sentencing this week for the Colorado man who admitted to murdering his wife, his two children, and to causing the death of his unborn child. That came in return for a plea on murder charges. Prosecutors promised not to pursue the death penalty in return for that plea, I should say. It turns out that is exactly what the victim's family wanted in the Chris Watts case. So it's a series of life sentences without parole for Chris Watts, plus other sentences for the lesser counts. The mother of Shannon Watts thanked people from around the world who prayed and comforted the family.
I have no idea who gave you the right to take their lives. But I know God and his mighty angels were there at that moment to bring them home to paradise. God gives us free will. So not only did you take the family of four, your family of four, you took your own life. I want the world to know that our daughter and her children were so loved by us. They will always be protected by God and his mighty angels. I didn't want death for you because that's not my right. Your life is between you and God now, and I pray that he has mercy for you.
Chris Watts' parents apparently want him to confess. His mother addressed him directly, and in court, he could barely take it.
I have known you since the day you were born into this world. I have watched you grow from a quiet and sweet, curious child who Bella reminded me so much of, to a young man who worked hard in sports and later mechanics to achieve your goals. You are a good friend, brother, father, and son. We have loved you from the beginning, and we still love you now. This might be hard for some to understand how I can sit here under these circumstances and tell you, although we are heartbroken, although we can't imagine what could have led us to this day, but we love you. Maybe you can't believe it either. As the Lord said in Jeremiah 3:31, I have loved you with an everlasting love. Therefore, I have continued my faithfulness to you. And you, as your mother, Chris, I have always loved you, and I still do. I hate what has happened. Your father and sister and I are struggling to understand why. But we will remain faithful as your family, just as God remains faithful because of his unconditional love for all, for us all. We love you. And we forgive you, son.
Attorney Michael Bryan is back with us tonight. Michael, I wanted to get your take on this because this is interesting legally. It seems like everyone in the broader family, the Chris Watts family, the Shannon Watts family, okay, so multiple victims here, but it seems like everybody wanted life in prison here out of a hope that Chris Watts would eventually confess and come to some religious catharsis about that.
You know, a plea deal is not very satisfying to anybody. You know, those of us who watch these things don't really get to see how it may or may not have unfolded. This case leaves this huge gaping why. You know, why did it happen? So maybe they're thinking they'll get the answer to that if he's alive in prison, has time to reflect and think about this horrible crime or crimes. And maybe they'll get that satisfying result that they're looking for.
You know, the prosecutor was relatively quiet leading up to this, but during the sentencing hearing and then certainly after, he spilled a lot of the beans and turned around and said, okay, there was this other woman that came out in the papers a couple of days before the sentencing hearing, and that apparently Chris Watts was really pursuing her and ignoring his own wife's pleas to try to keep the marriage together.
Yeah, and that's a pretty extreme remedy if that's in fact what was going on. That still doesn't answer the question for me. There are a couple of other options than killing your entire family if you have a woman on the side.
Exactly. Look, the prosecutor got into that directly. I want to go into that right now if we can. The prosecutor said Shannon Watts arrived home from an out-of-town work conference about 1:45 in the morning. From there, the prosecutor laid out what he believes the evidence would have shown if this case went to trial.
The defendant coldly and deliberately ended four lives. Not in a fit of rage, not by way of accident, but in a calculated and sickening manner. The doorbell camera on their home shows her arriving back home from the airport. Shortly thereafter, at least according to the defendant, they had what he referred to as an emotional conversation about the state of their marriage and about what their lives would look like going forward. What was said during that emotional conversation, only he knows. What we do know is that shortly after that, the defendant strangled her to death with his own hands. We know that he slowly took her life the morning of August 13th. We know that this was not done in an uncontrolled, vengeful manner that he tried to describe to agents from CBI and the FBI. If that were the case, you would expect to see vicious, horrible bruising about her neck, shoulders, and face. You would expect to see the hyoid bone in her neck broken. You would expect to see some kind of defensive wounds on his body as she struggled and fought for her own life. None of those are present. The man seated to my right smothered his daughters. Why? Imagine the horror in Bella's mind as her father took her last breaths away. Your Honor, I understand very clearly, Bella fought back for her life.
That's how one child died. According to the prosecutor, the other child had no defensive injuries. The prosecutor said a neighbor's doorbell camera caught footage of Chris Watts loading the bodies into his truck. And that led to all the comments about Chris Watts discarding his family as if the family members were garbage. The prosecutor next discussed a possible motive.
All of this, Your Honor, for what? Why? Why did this have to happen? His motive was simple, Your Honor. He had a desire for a fresh start, to begin a relationship with a new love that overpowered all decency and feelings for his wife, his daughters, and unborn son. While Shanann texted the defendant over and over again in the days and weeks leading up to her death, attempting to save her marriage, the defendant secreted pictures of his girlfriend into his phone and texted her at all hours of the night. While Shanann sent the defendant self-help and relationship counseling books, one of which, ironically enough, was thrown in the garbage, he was searching the internet for secluded vacation spots to take his new love in researching jewelry. And while Shanann took the girls to visit family in North Carolina, the defendant went to car museums and the sand dunes with his new girlfriend. The stark contrast between the subjects of their internet and text content is absolutely stunning. Even the morning after he killed them and disposed of their bodies, he made several phone calls. One was to the school where the girls were supposed to start, telling the school that the girls would not be coming to school anymore, that they were being unenrolled, presumably to give him some more time before law enforcement notification about them going missing. He contacted a realtor to start discussing the selling of his house, and he texted with his girlfriend about their future. None of this answers the questions of why, however. If he was this happy and wanted a new start, get a divorce. You don't annihilate your family and throw them away like garbage.
The prosecutor asked a question and never received a clear answer. Despite all the requests from his own family and from his wife's family, Chris Watts did not issue a confession in court. His attorney issued this very brief statement.
Good morning, Your Honor. Mr. Watts has asked us to share this morning that he is devastated by all of this. And although he understands that words are hollow at this point, he is sincerely sorry for all of this. Thank you.
Now for the judge's reading of the sentence, along with some commentary from the bench.
Showing mercy on Mr. Watts is understood. And I respect that decision to request that the district attorney not seek the death penalty in this case. And so the court is going to accept this plea bargain under the circumstances. Words that come to mind when I hear the evidence in this case are a senseless crime and the viciousness of the crime. And equally aggravating in this court's determination is the despicable act of disposing of the bodies in the manner in which they were done in this case. I've been a judicial officer now for starting my 17th year, and I could objectively say that this is perhaps the most inhumane and vicious crime that I have handled out of the thousands of cases that I have seen. And nothing less than a maximum sentence would be appropriate. And anything less than the maximum sentence would depreciate the seriousness of this offense.
Let's go back to Michael Bryant one more time for some additional analysis. So, Michael, it seems that empathy won the day here. The victim and the defendant were all family. Forgiveness is probably the only way that they can live with some degree of peace about this.
Yeah, and the prosecutor is very deferential to the victim's families. If they are okay with a lesser penalty, then they will go forward with it. I think it's interesting that Chris Watts' attorney said he was very sorry. So sorry he couldn't stand up here and say, I'm sorry. I think he's sorry that he got caught. That's what I think he's sorry about.
I think that's what a lot of people would say, but let's listen to the way that he allegedly operated here. No weapon, strangled his wife with his own hands after she came back from the airport from an out-of-town work conference. 1:45 in the morning, sometime in those overnight hours.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very personal killing. This is not hiding behind a door and conking somebody on the head when they come around. This is in-your-face strangulation. It doesn't get more personal than that.
Smothered his daughters, and all while he was carrying on this affair with the girlfriend. Just incredible.
I'd like to be the girlfriend in this case. I mean, to learn what he has done to be with you. You know, I'm assuming that's not working out, but still, the motivation and the guilt it must put on this girl is horrible.
Yeah, Michael Bryant, attorney, appreciate your insight as always.
Thank you, Aaron.
Okay, that's all the time we have for today on the Daily Debrief. We're going to remind you that the Law and Crime Network will be live tomorrow starting at 9 a.m. We will see you then. Have a good evening.